You are listening to Punk News Podcast, episode 248. And this is Features Editor John Gentile. Welcome back to the Punk News Podcast. We're going to just do quick intros this week. I'm here with Managing Editor Adam White. Adam White, what's happening?
Still waiting for a baby to be born.
Well, congrats and good luck on that. Are you overdue now or underdue or due right on time? What's it looking like?
Right on time is going to be right between this episode and the next one.
What if you have? What if your wife starts having a baby during the recording of this episode?
I told her that it would be really funny if she ran into the room and screamed, "We have to go to the hospital," and then I'm going to hang up. So that's what's going to happen.
That'd be great. And that guy laughing, that's Tricky Ricky Frankel out there in L.A. Tricky Ricky, what's happening, man? How's it going?
Today was one of those days where I was battling that rush, that famous L.A. traffic. It was rough, but I got through it and now I'm here for the podcast. I'm excited.
Yeah, as Ricky mentioned, today was kind of a crazy day. A lot happened at Punk News today and this week especially, but especially today. We were going to have an interview with the guys from Amnesia Rock Fest, but we're actually going to push that till next week because it's been such a crazy day at Punk News. And so I think we'll just kick off today with an email. As always, you can reach us at podcast@punknews.org. This is an email from David. David's written in before. He said, "Hey, John, I just wanted to ask you about Ben Weasel. Did you hear Ben talking about you on his podcast? I think you should reconsider his conditions and find a way to interview him. The tracks from his new album that he played on Weasel Radio were of a much grander scale than I could imagine. The one with him singing was pretty dull, but the multiple ones with Blagg singing and the Saccharine Trust guitarist playing leads were pretty epic and made me interested in the project. I think you're a great interviewer, and Ben is an interesting subject. I think you should reconsider his conditions." Signed, David. Well, David, thanks for the email. You know, that's been going around a lot, and actually Ben Weasel's mentioned me now three times on his podcast, Weasel Radio, and unfortunately he said a lot of things that just simply aren't true. So I'm not really interested in fighting with Ben Weasel or starting a war or anything like that. Basically, what I'm just going to do is explain what he said that is true and what he said that is not true, because good practice is whenever someone lies about you or says an untruth about you, you really should point it out. So as I'm sure you all know, way back in 2011, Ben Weasel hit two women at a South by Southwest performance. He leaped out into the crowd and did a haymaker and smashed one girl into the face. He got pulled back up on stage by security, and then I think the owner of the club, who was a female, came out and tried to restrain him, and he smashed her in the face, and then when she turned around, he gave her a kidney punch. So he hit two women. And that's kind of about where the tide against Ben Weasel really turned. He's always been kind of an agitator, but that's where people went from, you know, acceptance of his general surliness to pretty much hating him and thinking he's a bad guy. And my perspective has always been, I don't think Ben Weasel is actually as bad as everybody thinks he is. I think he got caught up in a bad situation, made some bad decisions, but really was more powered by adrenaline than actual forethought or actual meanness or vindictiveness. I think he got caught up in a bad situation and couldn't swallow his pride and say, "Listen, I made some mistakes. I really shouldn't have hit one woman in the face in a haymaker, hit another in the back of the head and hit her in the kidneys. I think he got swept up and he was too ashamed of his actions to really apologize. So he decided to take the evil guy route and say, I'm glad I did this." And, you know, since then, about once a month, once every month, he's talked about how he's treated differently than everybody else. Like I said, I don't think at the time, and really up until a couple of weeks ago, I didn't think Ben Weasel really was as bad as everyone said he was. Like I said, I think he just made some bad decisions. So he's got a new album coming out, and I've actually been thinking about interviewing him ever since 2011, because once a year I try to interview subjects that aren't loved by Punk News or difficult subjects, because I think it's interesting, and I really do like learning about people that maybe not everybody likes but might be interesting people. So on April 24, I sent out an email to Ben Weasel's, I don't know if this is his press or some general email address associated with Ben Weasel, Punk News would like to interview Ben Weasel about his upcoming album. Is he available for a phone interview? Thanks, John G. That's all I said. Then I get an email back from a guy called Tom on April 30th. He says, John, I've got an answer for you on our latest podcast. And then he links me to the latest podcast. And he says, if you'd like to proceed, let me know. Or conversely, if you prefer a less rambunctious and unpredictable interview, our producer, Mike Kennerty, would probably be willing to speak with you. Signed, Ben. So it's unclear if this is from Ben or Tom or somebody else. So I listened to the podcast. And on the podcast, they do a couple of things that were troubling. One of the things they say, Ben Weasel says, I have no reason to do an interview on Punk News because I get nothing out of it. I don't need anything from Punk News. So I understand that position. He's saying that because the Punk News people hate him, he really has no reason to do it. Even though I think that's a little self-contradictory because he loves talking about how he's an agitator. So if he really wants to be an agitator, wouldn't he go do an interview on Punk News? But regardless, after that, he says, oh, and also his main concern, which I understand, his main concern is that he fears that we would edit the interview to make him look worse than he actually is. And I can understand that concern from any band. Obviously, I've never edited anybody's interview to make them look worse. That would not be credible journalism. I've never ever done that. But I can understand how Ben Weasel, who might have been in those kind of situations, would be concerned about that. So then afterwards, Ben Weasel says, but if he wants to come on my podcast and do an interview on Weasel Radio, then I would do that, and I really want to ask him some things about Punk News. So essentially, he's saying he wants me to go on Weasel Radio so he can try to skewer Punk News or learn about Punk News. And essentially, that was a bluff. And then he or the other guy that's on the podcast with him, who agrees with everything that Ben says, and it's really just like a talking head for Ben, or like everything Ben says, the other guy agrees with. And anytime the other guy deviates from what Ben says in the slightest, Ben like corrects him, and the guy immediately like apologizes or agrees with Ben. And I don't know how that kind of guy looks at himself in the mirror. I mean, he really does not express his own opinion whatsoever. But anyway, so Ben or the other guy says, you know, if he wants to come on Weasel Radio, we'll do an interview. I don't think he'll write us back. So essentially, it was a bluff. So here's my response on, let's see, April 30th. So I sent an email back, and I said, on the same day, I said, hi, all. I'd love to interview Ben. An interview on the Weasel Radio is just fine so long as it airs unedited on Weasel Radio, and we can run it on our own podcast along with a text transcription. How does that sound? And so essentially, you know, Ben's concern was that we would edit the interview. And so I said, fine, I'll go on your program so long as you don't edit it. That's fine, and we can run it at Punk News. So I think that's entirely reasonable. I get an email back from Tom, who I'm not exactly sure Tom is. He's either his press agent or his booking agent or just some guy that helps out Ben Weasel. Ben Weasel's got a lot of guys. It's not really clear what they do. So on April 30th, I get a reply from Tom. Awesome. Let's make sure all summer tour dates are listed in the podcast description, as well as a link to Recess Records' Baby Fat pre-order. That's the new record. You all will have fun. You always seem fine enough on the Punk News podcast, so I bet you two will actually have some good chemistry. Then I respond, same exact day, great. What day and time do you want to do the interview? Here's what Tom says. I'll figure out with Ben, and we will be in touch. They usually record podcasts on Wednesday afternoon. Is that possible? And I reply, same day. That time works, thanks. Tom replies, great. Also, I'd love to link up on the phone with you before this if you're cool with that. Nothing major, and I'm not worried about Ben. He's a big boy. Just want to ask you a few questions about the Punk News podcast and promo. Make sure you all and us get as much visibility from it as possible. And so I say, sure, what time do you want to talk? Then he says, sometimes, and I'm just reading all the emails, so no one says I'm editing anything. And then he says, sometime tomorrow, perhaps if you have the time. I'm not a morning guy, and we have a lot of Weasel announcements, but the afternoon will work great. But if it doesn't, tomorrow after is fine. So I say, tomorrow works, 2 p.m. EST, and then he says, that's fine. So he gives me a call. And so I talk to Tom on the phone for about 16 to 18 minutes, and he unequivocally says that they agreed to do an interview where I go on Weasel Radio, where we also run the interview unedited on the Punk News podcast, and we do a text transcription. We talk about 16 minutes about how neither of us are looking to do a fight. We really want to learn about each other, and we both say that we think it'll work well. Unequivocally, Tom says that they will do an interview, that Ben Weasel agrees to an interview. So I think everything's great. Then later on the day, I get an email from Ben Weasel, which says, "What? I don't negotiate with terrorists. The offer's off the table." This is after his agent has already agreed to do the podcast and after I've already accepted his terms. And then I think he's joking because we've already got an agreement and everything's settled that we're going to do an interview. We just got to figure out the time. So I think he's telling a joke because I don't understand his email because he's directly contradicting what his agent just agreed to. So basically, he's breaking his word, I guess. But I didn't know that at the time. So I said, I thought he was joking, and I know Ben's Catholic. So I said, "Bless you, my son. Let us not forget that even God himself negotiated with terrorists." Exodus 9:1-3. "I encourage thee to act in a holy manner so that we may share all of this bread and wine," called an interview. And Exodus 9:1-13 is where God basically tells Moses to go talk to the Egyptians with terms for the release of the slaves from Egypt. So God does negotiate with terrorists in that. So I thought Ben was joking. Then, here's where we're at so far. Ben says, "I won't do an interview on Punk News, but if they come on the Weasel podcast, I will do an interview with them." I say, "Fine, let's do an interview on Weasel Radio." Ben's agent agrees to doing an interview on Weasel Radio. Everything squared away. On episode 2, Ben quotes, he rejects the terms of the interview, even though I've already accepted his offer and his agent has already confirmed that I've accepted his offer and that we're good to go. So there's no Ben rejecting our terms. There's Ben Weasel bluffing and saying that he will only do an interview on Weasel Radio, me calling his bluff and saying, "Let's do it," Ben getting scared, and then him lying and saying he's rejecting terms. So I was perfectly willing to go on Weasel Radio and do an interview. And when he saw that I was willing to go on there and actually engage him instead of just, saying, "Oh, I'm too scared to do it," Ben got scared because I think he's scared of actual direct conflict and made up a story and said he rejected our terms when really he broke his word and lied and said he would do it and then changed his mind and said he wouldn't do it once we said we would do it. So anyways, and also he talks really bad about War on Women, which I was honored because he's like Googling my name and researching me, which honored me, I guess, that someone would be so interested they would, Google me and look up my history. And actually, Ben lies and says that I call Puccini a singer. I do not call Puccini a singer. I recommend that you reread the interview, Ben, because your reading skills lack. So just that. So anyway, I send a follow-up, and this is my follow-up on May 6th. "I've heard the latest podcast where Ben says he doesn't want to do an interview anymore." Oh, and I'm sorry. On the podcast that I just spoke about, he says, I still might be swayed if he emails me and gives me a good reason to do an interview, then maybe I'll consider it. So I know he's setting me up to kick me in the teeth, and I know whatever I send him, he's just going to say, "No, I'm not going to do an interview." But I email it to him anyway in the off chance that we get to interview him because I would like to interview Ben Weasel and really learn about him. So I send him an email, and I say, "Hi, I've heard about the latest podcast where Ben says he doesn't want to do an interview anymore. Certainly, I'm disappointed by this, and I certainly don't think that us also broadcasting an unedited copy of the interview is a demand, nevertheless an unreasonable one. If anything, it gives Screeching Weasel greater exposure. In the end, Ben encouraged me to sell him on the interview. In an effort to make it happen, I'll provide some brief reasons as why I think it should be an interesting piece." And then I list why I think it would be interesting, and then I close it as, "So like I said, I'd love to do an interview with Ben. If he would like to do it, please let me know. If not, I guess this is where we part. I hope Ben does want to do an interview." And then just today, Ben posted a new podcast, and here's what he said in the podcast. And he said a lot of inaccuracies, so I really got to clear them up. First of all, he says that he's rejecting our terms. As I stated before, he offered terms for us to do an interview. We accept it. I had several conversations with his manager or whoever this guy Tom is, where Tom unequivocally makes it clear that he will do an interview, and then he breaks his word and lies and says he's not going to do it anymore. So that's the first. The second thing he says that Punk News is owned by Buzz Media. That's incorrect. Punk News is not owned by Buzz Media. Punk News has never been owned by Buzz Media. Punk News had about a year-long relationship with Buzz Media, where Buzz Media basically collected ad revenue for us on our behalf. So they were essentially an advertising service on our website, but they never had any editorial control or any ownership in Punk News. And actually, Spin Media went bankrupt a little while ago, and so Spin Media is no more, and Punk News is owned by Auburn Paul. Punk News has always been owned by Auburn Paul, and Punk News has never not been owned by anybody but Auburn Paul. So Ben Weasel is lying when he says that Punk News was owned or was sold to Buzz Media. Simply is not true. He also brings up the GWAR article that we're going to talk about later, and here's where Ben lies again. Ben, basically, in the GWAR article, we basically talk about why GWAR is having a breakdown right now, and Ben says, this shows Punk News is biased because they would pick on me and they would pick on GWAR like that because GWAR is not D4 off with their heads. That is, Punk News only speaks bad or shows the bad side of bands that they dislike. And because Punk News hates GWAR, that's why they're posting these kinds of things. Well, that's an entirely ridiculous statement because by the Punk News readership, I get accused of over-reporting on my four favorite bands, The Dwarves, The Melvins, Black Flag, and who?
GWAR.
Right. I mean, GWAR is like my favorite band. So Ben's thesis that we're only like reporting on the bad side of GWAR because we hate them is wrong. They're like my favorite band. So he has no idea what he's talking about. He says he's not going to do the interview, which is fine, even though we already agreed to it and got scared when we said we would actually do it and ran away. That's fine. So he's lying about that. And then he calls me scum. And at first I'm like, you know, how can this guy call me scum? But, you know, I mean, Ben Weasel calling me scum doesn't really mean anything. I mean, this is a guy that, you know, has gotten kicked off pretty much every record label he's ever been on. This is a guy who's fired or had quit like 20 people from his band. He can't seem to have a long-lasting relationship with any band members. This is a guy that haymakered like a 120-pound female in the face, then hit another woman in the back of the head, then gave her a kidney punch after he hit her again, and doesn't really seem to be sorry that he did that. He seems to be glad or proud that he hit two women. So him calling me scum doesn't really mean anything. I mean, that doesn't bother me. And so the point of this is the following, is we told Ben that we would do an interview on his radio after he suggested I will do an interview on my – he said to us, I will only do an interview with Punk News if they come on Weasel Radio. We said we would do it. Once we did it, Ben backed out and got scared and said, oh, I reject Punk News' terms, even though he's the one that issued the terms and we accept it. So it just goes to show that he's not really – like he likes to pretend he's this big agitator, but he really just got scared when someone was willing to face off against him, I guess. The point of my interview, I wanted to see – I realized that Ben Weasel portrays a character, and I realized that the Ben Weasel you hear on Weasel Radio, the Ben Weasel on the records, isn't the real person. And the point of my interview was to really get an understanding of who this real person is. Is he really as bad as he is? Is there some humanity deep down in there? Because it seems to me he's a very unhappy person, you know. Happy people don't go around picking on fights with the Max Levine Ensemble, who's like the most harmless band ever. Happy people don't go around picking on Brendan Kelly's band, Lawrence Arms. You know, a happy person doesn't go around looking to piss people off. That's generally an angry person or a bully, which Ben Weasel does. You know, that's what Ben Weasel does. And so the point of my interview was, see, is there really a person under there? And I think there is. And after this whole exchange, I wanted to say, well, Ben Weasel's just a creep deep down, and that's all there is to it. But the more I thought about it, you know, Ben Weasel is friends with Black Dahlia, or friendly acquaintances. And as the Punk News listeners know, I have utmost respect for Black Dahlia. I think Black Dahlia is one of the greatest punk rock musicians ever, maybe the greatest. I think maybe Ben Weasel wants to be Black Dahlia, but he doesn't quite have the finesse or the skill to do provocative things, but then do them well enough that people don't just hate you because you're just being a jerk. But the point is this, is if Black Dahlia thinks there's virtue in Ben Weasel, then maybe there is. And maybe deep down in Ben Weasel, there is a person that is more rounded, is more, has more depth, and really doesn't want to be in the situation where he's in where just everybody hates him and he just tries to make more people hate him, a la Greg Ginn, you know? And so I'd love to interview him with regards to that. The interview to do it with Ben Weasel will always be open. Anytime Ben Weasel wants to do an interview, I'm happy to do it. And if he doesn't want to, that's fine too. And that's just how it is. I just had to clear that up. To briefly summarize, we said, Ben Weasel, you want to do an interview? He said, I'll only do an interview on the Weasel Radio podcast. We said, that's fine with us. His booking agent or whoever confirmed it twice. And then Ben Weasel backed out when he saw that we were actually going to do an interview with him because I think he was scared of the confrontation or just of the interview. So, you know, bummed me out. I think deep down, Ben Weasel gets more flack than he deserves. I think he's not the vile guy that everyone thinks he is, but I don't know. And I think an interview would clear that up. So I guess it's clear the air. Let's play a track by a guy that I have tons of respect for, a guy that I think is one of the greatest punk rockers ever, a guy of extreme talent. Let's play a track by Jello Biafra. Just today, Jello Biafra released a new record called Jello Biafra, and the New Orleans Raunch and All Soul All-Stars. And basically what it is, it's a live recording from 2011 where Bill Davis of Dash Rip Rock invited Jello Biafra to fly down to New Orleans and do a cover set of soul, roots, garage rock, and blues tunes. And let me tell you, this record is amazing. I mean, this record is so much fun. It's just Jello and a 10-piece band blasting through all these New Orleans songs. You know, there's a lot of horns. It's just wild, revelatory, a little sloppy on purpose, just a crazy good time. Let's play a track from that. Let's play Land of a Thousand Dances. This is Jello Biafra, and this is basically a one-time-only release. Jello Biafra and the New Orleans Raunch and Soul All-Stars off their album Walk on Jindal Spiders, out now on Alternative Tentacles Records, Land of a Thousand Dances.
Everybody jump up and down like crazy fucking people during this song.
One, two, three! One, two, three!
And we are back with the Punk News Podcast. And not only did I have a wild week, both Adam White and both Ricky Franco had wild weeks as well. Adam, what was your wild week? What happened in your wild week? What did your wild week entail?
Well, see, my wild week here is not necessarily I think something that had happened personally to me, but it happened to one of our writers, and I gotta stick up for a few things here, because every once in a while we get one of these bands that seems to not quite get how the internet allows them to communicate, or they don't quite understand the repercussions of doing things on the internet, and they seem to want to be in far more control of how the world works than how the world actually works. And these people tend to fly off the handle. They tend to, they tend to approach the people that write for Punk News that are all volunteers, that are all fans, that are all helping get the word out about these bands because they love them. They treat them like shit. So I want to step in here and talk about this. Now, I'm not going to list the band that I'm talking about here for two reasons. One, I think they're shitheads and it doesn't really matter. And two, I don't actually remember what the name of the band is. Although I, of course, know the name of the band that they used to be. So I'm going to leave this a little bit generic because this is not the first time this has happened, but it bears mentioning here. So what I want to talk about a little bit, and I apologize to anyone that is a actual professional or trained journalist here, because I am just going to butcher the lingo because I am absolutely not. But I am going to at least approach this as if the amateur journalists that are writing for Punk News are actually journalists. Let's just use that as our basic premise here. But here we go. If you are using social media, and by you, I mean you bands, if you're going and posting things online in a public place with an account that you control, we're going to consider that a first-person source. We're going to consider that you saying a thing in public. And people do this all the time. This isn't us coming up with some sort of weird rule just because we're a music publication that we're going to do that the rest of the world doesn't do. Fuck, like Ted Cruz announced his presidential candidacy on Twitter. No one had to go and go, oh, we can't report that. We'll have to go talk to Ted Cruz and find out if that's actually what he wants the world to know. No, he said it on an account that he controls, or someone that he is involved with said it on an account that is in, you know, its official capacity, a Ted Cruz account. So people reported on it. By that same token, if you're a band and you go on to Facebook or Twitter or Instagram or YouTube or whatever, and you post something about your band, and you do it, and it's an account that is completely yours, and there's no question as to whether it's an account that's really yours. I'm not saying someone goes and creates a Twitter account for your band out of the blue. This has very clearly been demonstrated as your account. If you go and post something there, we are absolutely within our rights to go take that information and pass it on to the masses. And believe it or not, that's where a lot of our information comes from. The majority of the stuff that we report on Punk News these days, it doesn't really come from publicists anymore. A lot of it comes from bands who have completely taken control of their own communications and are using all of these social media tools to actually talk about themselves. So if you're going to post something, we're probably going to take it and we will probably write a story about it. And the story in question here was a story by a person that was a complete devotee of the members of this band. It was a fawning story as much as it could be within the context of how we write on Punk News. This person loved this band. They were excited to go and talk about them and mention things that, talk about the group. That's what they wanted to do. So they go and they post this story, and in the story, we try to reference a little bit of information with regards to what's going on in the history. So it turns out that a bunch of the people that are in this band were in other bands that the Punk News audience had known about. So what we want to do is we want to go then mention that because it's context, and that context is then going to help our readers actually understand what's in the story. And even if we got this story from a press release, we'd probably still do that because it only makes sense to. Why would you not mention past history of the members? But the band blew up and they contacted our writer personally and basically threw up a bunch of shit until the writer took down the story. Now,
they were really nasty to her.
They were really nasty. I would not have, if this was one of these things that had been decided upon by committee, I don't think we would have taken down the story. But, you know, they were upset that people that they liked, that people that they respected, the people that they thought were they were friends with, had gotten really angry, so they took down the story. So fine, that happened. But here's the thing, is you don't get to control the narrative, bands. If you're going to put out a press release and you want to write that press release however you want to write it, and no one knows this information before you put it out, then fine, you can write whatever press release you want. And hopefully the press picks up on the narrative that you're trying to establish on the press release, and hopefully they run with that information in the way that you've presented it, but they don't have to. But in any case, you don't get to decide if you announce something in public whether we tell the world about it. You've already told the world about it. You can't unring that bell. I don't even understand really what the band would have wanted out of this. They would have wanted us to say, take the information that they posted in public and then circle back to, I don't know, their label or their press release or everything or whoever, and see if we can get a sanitized version of this to go post. That's not the way this works. You don't get to decide what context your work is considered in. You don't get to decide whether we mention the past bands that you were in or not. If you don't want to be associated with those past bands anymore, that's not really our problem. So while we are not, you know, we're not the New York Times, we're not professional paid journalists, we're also not here just to do whatever you want whenever you want us to do it. We're not here just to put out stuff that will, you know, help establish the story that you're trying to tell. Sometimes we're going to take things that look like punk news and we're going to post them. And if that's all true, the stuff that we've posted, I don't fucking care if it doesn't meet your timeline or your narrative or your plan for when you were going to put that information out. We're not leaking stuff here. We're picking up on stuff you've posted on Instagram or you've posted on Facebook. So that's just the way that the world works these days, and you're going to have to learn to deal with that. So, yeah, that's where I'm going.
Adam, let's clear the air.
Damn. That was some heavy shit from both of you.
My wife was sending me a text message that says, "You're echoing throughout the house. Shut up."
I mean, honestly, the Punk News podcast is usually a pretty friendly place. And it just happened this week we had two people, two groups, two separate bands act kind of shitty and kind of out of line. And this is just my advice to the kids. If somebody says something about you that's untrue, then you need – I mean, you don't have to like call names or sling mud. But if someone says something about you that's untrue, you need to immediately point out what they're saying is untrue. Otherwise, it might catch on and we'll play you later on. And I meant to say this earlier. With Ben Weasel, he's going to say bad stuff about me after this podcast or whatever. That's fine. He's going to call me names. I'm really not going to respond unless he makes up more lies about me, in which case I may or may not respond. I don't know. But Adam, let's clear the air, man. This is heavy. And then we'll come back and Ricky's probably got some heavy shit to talk about too because he's pissed off as well.
Yeah, wait, should I go with my...
Well, Adam, we got a tune?
Oh, yeah. Sure,
Adam's so shooken up. That...
I'm just lost here, just trying to stand up for, I don't know, what like the fact that we can read the internet and say things.
Well, I bet, listen, people, Adam is 100% right on this. And, you know, I understand how bands have things planned, but if you want to keep things secret, don't put them on public social media. And then if you do, don't snap on your biggest fan when they see something you've put on public social media and make a news story out of it. They're really just trying to help you out, you know?
So anyways, let's do something happy here. I'm going to play you a song. It's by a band that I played in the podcast before and I really love them. Another label I really love. So this is now where the podcast transitions from like the Rage News Hate Cast.
The War the Cast.
Love, yeah, into the Love Cast. So anyways, this is a song called Fever. It's by a band out of Toronto called Mexican Slang on Buzz Records. So this is a re-recording of a song that they had originally released back in 2013 on an EP that they had put out called Twerp. Now, if you would listen to the song Fever back on Twerp, and you can find it on Bandcamp, you're going to find a song that is – It's like it's super fuzzed out, super lo-fi, punishingly so. There's a drum machine backing it, and it's incredibly raw. It's one of these songs that's just loud and piercing, and it reminds me of almost like the Hunches or one of those kind of bands. This new version is far more reflective of, I think, the band that Mexican Slang is today. It's cleaner, but cleaner in a sharp, biting way. It's really tightly wound, almost in the same way that like Hot Snakes is. So anyways, this song is called Fever. It's off a new 7-inch that's coming out on Buzz Records, and the band is called Mexican Slang out of Toronto. All right, we're back from that. That was Mexican Slang with Fever. We're all happy now. Everything's good. Ricky,
yeah.
What's happy?
Okay, so my crazy week happened a month ago. And for our dedicated listeners, I was on the Record Store Day podcast, and then but the one I was on before that, which was episode 238, we were talking about the new Red City Radio album, and I reviewed it on Punk News, gave it four to five stars. I really like it. I think it'll be on my top 20 list this year. If you haven't listened to it, check it out. So I wasn't like attacking anyone at all. I was just curious and just genuinely concerned about Red City Radio because I'm a big fan of theirs. And I talked about how I was a little like cautiously suspicious about how Paul Penley, their guitarist, left and just leaving for personal reasons. There's no bad blood, and there really wasn't any bad blood. But I was a little confused by that because they had just finished their first headlining tour, and that seemed like a bit like maybe there was something that actually went on behind the scenes that we'd know about. So I just tweeted out the podcast like I usually do when I'm on it, and. I didn't say anything bad about the band or Paul, but, what happened was Paul actually got back to me and about my comments. And he said, just replying to the, he says, in response to the comments on the podcast. I had some personal things I wanted to take care of away from the band, nothing sinister. Also, they knew months ahead of the last tour, as did Elway and Direct Hit, which was their headlining tour that happened last year. I have no aggression. Wish them the very best. Cheers. And then I kind of fanboyed out and said, totally respect that, man. At the time, I didn't know it was something everyone knew about months ahead. As a big fan of RCR, I guess I found the timing curious. Love the stuff you and RCR have written. Just finished learning a version of Events on Guitar. Just, yeah. And then he says, no worries. Was listening to the podcast and had a minute. Figured I'd reach out, and I thanked him. So, yeah, he was totally cool. And then, like, I guess on the 7th, Red City Radio posted on their Facebook that he actually just had a baby boy on the 7th, I think. So, obviously, there is no bad blood. Not really, there was no confusion. I was just between anyone, but it was just me, like, just wondering. So, all's good in the Red City Radio realm.
Well, I'm glad to hear that, Ricky, and excellent detective work. Let's talk about something that's got a lot of people have got a lot of opinions about. Recently, Laura Jane Grace, Miley Cyrus, and also Joan Jett have been a part of Miley Cyrus's Happy Hippie Presents. Happy Hippie is Miley Cyrus's organization dedicated to helping homeless and LGBTA youth. So I guess to bring awareness to it, Miley Cyrus, Joan Jett, and Laura Jane Grace recorded a cover of The Replacements' Androgynous, and also Laura Jane Grace and Miley did a cover of True Trans Soul Rebel, which was off the last Against Me record. People were really divided. I actually thought both these songs were really good. I keep saying I'm not the world's biggest Against Me fan, and I'm not, but I really liked the last record. I thought the Androgynous cover was cool. I'm a huge Joan Jett fan. I thought the True Trans Soul Rebel version was good, too. Ricky, man, I know you are the world's biggest Against Me fan. What do you think of these videos?
I don't think I can claim I'm the world's biggest Against Me fan, but I think I'm second to Britt Strummer, though, because she definitely knows a lot more than I do. But I have everything Against Me is put out on vinyl, and I do. They are my favorite band. I was very split on the first on this whole thing. I was very jolted and confused by this as a fan, and so I needed to so before I commented, and I didn't comment on either video, before I said anything stupid, I just wanted to really take this in. I think that both performances were good. I have nothing bad to say about Joan Jett or Laura Jane. Really best to them. I know I'm not the biggest Joan Jett fan, but I know why she's important. I get it. And I'm a ton of respect for her. Laura, you know, favorite punk rock person ever or whatever. And then but fuck Miley Cyrus, I'm so sick of this bullshit. So here's the deal. I don't fault her for, like, you know, this is obviously a really good important cause, and I get that, and good for on Laura and Joan for using Miley's fame and to get the word out and spread the message. I really get that, and that's okay with me. But first of all, Miley literally acts dumb in both of these videos. I mean, she,
what do you mean? What do you mean?
It's like she barely just heard the songs, maybe for like the first time a half hour before, and just barely sang enough just so she could say that she's sang with these two people. I would like to congratulate everyone, because you have now just witnessed witnessed a Hollywood-esque PR, not attack, but like
secret maneuver,
a PR maneuver. Okay. I really think that this was just, this is some insurance for her image. Remember, let's put this into context. This is a glorified hillbilly that twerks, to sexist songs that what's his name?
Billy Ray Cyrus.
No. What's his name?
Pharrell.
No. Oh, the guy that did that song with Pharrell.
Oh, yeah.
And then they got sued.
Adam Thicke's son, yeah.
Yeah, okay, him. Let's Robin keep that Thicke, in mind. She basically banged a foam finger at the VMAs, okay? So let's just keep that clear, okay? And I'm thinking to myself, you know, these are great performances and stuff like that, but fuck, and I get why this was done, and I respect, again, Joan Jett and Laura for that. I cannot, but separately, if you took... The fact that Miley Cyrus had to participate in this, she couldn't have just said, howdy, y'all, just wanted to introduce, you know, them, and here's the song, and then she left, I would have been much better off with that. And then, you know, maybe she would twerk off screen, and that would be it.
Ricky, you are brutal. Brutal.
I'll tell you why I'm being brutal. I did not get into punk rock so I could see people like mainstream, you know, glorified artists like Miley Cyrus, a Disney fucking tool, okay? A Disney tool who really only got into the business because Billy Ray had one ridiculously stupid song in the 90s, okay? Can we please put that let's put this all into context, okay? I did not get into punk rock so I can see people like her. It's so I could avoid those people.
I love how angry you are. I was just thinking you were going to be
I needed happy just to ch- I needed to like I really needed to like sit and think about this for a while. Like I really needed to like parse this out. So really I see this more as Laura as an activist and an artist, but an activist first, and using Miley's fame and a well-meaning charity that I think is a great cause to get the word out. But I don't believe for a second that Miley knew what the words of Trans Soul Rebel, True Trans Soul Rebel, were before. Even the band Against Me, before this idea came to play. And I don't even think she knew who the Replacements were either. Okay, she is a year younger than I am. And I've done my punk rock research. I doubt that, and I put in my time. I really doubt that Miley Cyrus has really sat down and done this. And I don't know. Fuck.
Ricky, let me ask you, what mainstream celebrity would be fitting to bring notice to this type of organization and play with Large Angry and Joey J?
I don't doubt Miley's necessarily her genuineness, her being genuine about this particular issue. That's fine. I think Lady Gaga would have done something same thing. She's been totally friendly to the trans and LGBT community anyway. Like, that probably would have happened. But there's just something that really disagreed with me when I saw this. I'm like, you know what? Why couldn't you just let Joan Jett and Laura do their thing? Why do you have to have all the attention all the time?
So your bullshit detector is going off, but you can't exactly quantify why?
Because I just don't need to see her there. I think this is a lot of it was some PR insurance for Miley, to be honest.
Could be.
And I just, in the back of my mind, and this was totally made up. I'm not saying this is happening, but I had this vision of just, you know, I'm going to Laura's acoustic show in Hollywood later this month. And I just had this vision of her like saying, I'd like to bring up Miley Cyrus to do a song with me. I would be on the verge. I'd be furious. Why does she have to invade this part of my life? Obviously that hasn't been announced, and I'm not saying that's happening, but I just had this vision. I'm like, shit, that could, is that a possibility? And I just wouldn't be able to handle it that well. I wouldn't storm out all pissed off, but oh my God, I wouldn't be too thrilled about it. And it's not like I'd be, you know, I've read interviews like with Against Me about how like when they signed to Fett, they had, you know, their tires on their van slashed or anything like that. I'm not like militant like that. I'd just be like, why is she here? Why is this artist that bought a $4 million house in the richest part of Los Angeles with her own vineyard? Because everyone needs a vineyard.
Maybe she's here. Italian.
What is she?
I don't know.
But that changed this.
Anyway, I'm just I'm not like shitting on this video or anything like that. It's just I just get that thing where like I don't need to see a mainstream artist with someone I really really admire. And I'm not faulting Laura or Joan Jett for it, and because I get it, like this message needs to be heard. I get that, but I don't know why she had to like just try and steal the attention. She barely knew the words to the song. She just kind of did enough so she could say, yeah, I sang with these people. I'm done.
Wow, okay.
I like how that's what Ricky came up after he thought about it. Like he sat down to like calm himself and his rage grew.
Well, the first video didn't do that to me. The second one really did. I'm not angry at Laura or anyone about it, but I just don't need to see, these are the people that I don't need to have shoved down my throat, especially when I'm in a, when I'm looking at punk news or listening or just, you know, being more punk rock oriented than in my life than other stuff in my life. I don't need that. I get this stuff, you know, changing the channels all the time.
That, you know, that's kind of an interesting perspective there, because that, I mean, a lot of the reason why I got into punk rock when I did was to try to escape, you know, all the stuff that was happening in the mainstream. So I get that. For some reason, I don't look at this and it doesn't seem to, it doesn't incest me in the same way that it does you. And I don't know why. I don't know. I looked at it and the delivery of it seemed so sort of tepid and inoffensive to me. And Miley herself was such a non-entity in the song. Well, you said herself, she doesn't really sing or do anything. That I was just kind of chalking this up to like, okay, it's a charity thing they're doing, whatever. Maybe some Miley Cyrus kids will go listen to Against Me. But, you know, I totally get the not wanting those worlds to be, intruded upon.
And usually that kind of stuff doesn't bother me, but God damn, just... I just didn't, especially like, you know, I have a younger brother and sister. And when my sister, who is, both of them are not into punk rock, but when my sister says, hey, did you see Laura and Miley Cyrus were singing together, and she like knows about it and stuff like that, I just feel like a part of like the punk rock, like secret is out, not like the secret, but like in quotes, secret is like out there now. But I get like Laura is now, and I think I'm having a little bit of a problem coming to terms with the fact that Laura is now an activist and an artist. And I think they're both equal now in her life, which is fine. But I think I'm just like all those like songs and like those albums that I just worship are now like being like out there more. And I guess, and I want her to be successful, but at the same time, I don't want like Miley involved at all.
I actually understand Ricky's concern. I think is he has this thing that's special, and he's worried that outside influence, particularly pop influence, might water it down or make it less potent. Is that correct?
I think an art not necessarily being out there, because like when Against Me got played down here on the radio, that didn't bother me, and I'm not saying like they're sellouts or anything, because that's stupid shit. But when like it's invaded like this, I think, I think the best way to describe the feeling I had was I felt intruded upon.
See, I think it's the other way around, honestly. At least that's how I'm choosing to read it right now. I'm still on the fence about Miley Cyrus. I don't think she's the world's greatest singer, but she does have a great charisma about her, or, you know, a great character that she plays, which is a big part of music and art in general. I see this as Laura Jane Grace invading the pop mainstream, you know?
Yeah, I get that too.
We talked about Penny Rimbaud last week, where Penny Rimbaud was glad that David Beckham was wearing a Crass shirt to, you know, kind of spread the Crass message. I'd like to hope we can read this as that, and that it's, you know, the punk rock people bringing punk rock messages to a very mainstream audience that maybe isn't so LGBTA friendly, you know? Now, I'm not sure that's what it is. It all could be a big PR rope-a-dope, like you're saying, Ricky, particularly now that because pop and indie are so meshed together. But I'd like to hope that it's really Laura Jane Grace invading the pop world rather than vice versa.
And I thought about that too, but at the same time, this Miley is someone, and a lot of these, and I don't think a lot, I don't know how if the rest of, if like a lot of the country kind of realizes this, but these mega stars, their lives are devoted to their publicists, their PR firms, and their labels. Anything that is somehow like a surprise, is most of the time you can guess is a stunt. And I'm not saying this is a stunt, I would say that there's a really good chance that this was not put on with Miley's, all of Miley's thought. I think a lot of people were in the background researching this and figuring out who to invite to do this.
Well, you know what? I'm gonna take the next story from you, because you're fired up and you're just gonna
do it.
You're just going to spit rage all over the place here. So John, this is mostly a you story, but I'll introduce what's going on here, and then you can kind of clear up what's going on, even though you hate this band.
Yeah, even though I hate this band, so I particularly pick on them, mm-hmm. but I wouldn't pick on my favorite band.
Yeah. All right. So anyways, so Kim Dilla, who was portraying the new Guar front woman, Volvatron, is no longer in the band. The band's Brett Pergeson / Pustulus Maximus stated, he said, "Kim did a great job, but we wanted to go in a different direction with the Volvatron character. You will absolutely see more of Volvatron in the future, just not portrayed by Kim. There is no ill will, no acrimony, and no drama. We respect Kim's talent without question. It just isn't what we needed in the character." Now, this statement, though, apparently has caught Dilla by surprise. And so she issued her own Facebook response to this. And you can find kind of the full back and forth, including some deleted parts of this Facebook conversation on Punk News. So Dilla's basically saying that, you know, that she learned about this on the internet and there wasn't really a lot of respect in her having to learn it there. John, you're the Guar guy. What's going on here? How do we read this one?
Here's how I read this one. Jezebel tried to make this a gender issue. I don't think this is a gender issue at all. Guar has had at least four female main characters in the band since their inception. The longest being Slymenstra Hyman, who was in the band from 91 to 99, I think. So this is not a gender issue. What it seems to be is it seems to be a miscommunication issue. And really what it is, it's a band in recovery process. As you all know, Dave Brocky, the frontman of Guar, died a year ago of a heroin overdose. Dave Brocky was the main force in Guar. He was the frontman. He was Otis Urungus. He was the driving force. Not that there weren't other driving forces in band. Guar was certainly not just Dave Brocky, but he was a core, irreplaceable element. So the band brought in a bunch of new people to try to recover from that. It's going to, and, you know, I worry, when a band has a public breakdown like this, it's often as a symptom of a band about to end. If we look when The Clash fired Mick Jones, if we look at the last few Germs shows, if we look at, you know, the recent Black Flag tour, when bands have these very public spats, it doesn't bode well for the band. It shows an era of creative decline and essentially a petering out and destruction of the band. I'm hoping that's not what this is. I don't think that's what this is. I saw the band on their first tour without Brocky. They were good, not great. Good, and they had promise. I think what it is, it's going to maybe they rushed on the road too soon. It's going to take some time to find someone that can not replace Brocky, but fill the void that Brocky left. You know, maybe it's going to take two people, maybe three, maybe someone else who's charismatic in a different way can come along and, you know, replace that space left by Brocky. So I'm very sad that Guar is having problems right now. I'm holding out hope that this is really just their growing and their healing process, which I think it might be. And I think Guar will recover and be maybe not quite as great as they used to be, but still an exceptional, extraordinary, unique band. I think they can do it. And I think this whole public spat is just what happens when one of the main guys is suddenly gone and you're not quite sure what to do. So maybe you make some wrong decisions and things fall apart too soon. But I think Guar can come back and I think Guar can repair themselves.
Her, cool. Like, her response was super passive aggressive.
Well, I don't want to take sides on this. Both sides no, were.
I'm not
were
taking sides. I'm not taking sides. I'm just saying, like, geez, like there was a lot of like under like tone anger in that.
There was a lot of anger on both sides. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, let's just stick with things that have people angry. I don't know what it is about this show. Anyway, so
we had a lot of pent up anger, Adam.
I guess. So here we go. So the late Nirvana frontman Kurt Cobain, he never released a solo album, but that will change as of this summer. Filmmaker Brett Morgan, who directed the new Cobain documentary called Kurt Cobain Montage of Heck, he told the web publication Bedford and Bowery in a recent interview that that there is an album that is coming out, and it's been pulled from 200 hours of recordings that Cobain left behind. This is the quote. He said, "The album will feel like you're hanging out with Kurt Cobain on a hot summer day in Olympia, Washington, as he fiddles around. It's going to really surprise people. Just to be clear, it's not a Nirvana album. It's just Kurt, and you're going to hear him do things you never expected to come out of him." So that's all we really know about this. So, this is likely to be, you know, the most interesting bits and scraps of of some demos and behind the scenes stuff and whatever that's been scraped together. But there you go. There is to be a Kurt Cobain solo album coming out. I don't even know if that's the right word for what this is. And I think part of the problem with this might be, and this is just maybe the problem we have with our terminology here, is that calling it an album, I think, is disingenuous. It's cool if I think it's a collection of recordings and a collection of, you know, interesting scraps in the same way that, say, like the Beatles anthology sets were, where it was like a bunch of stuff from like them goofing around in the studio and trying to put together songs and just talking to each other and things like that. Like, if it's an archival reel of audio, I guess that's one thing. Calling it an album and, you know, having, I'm just, you know, I'm picturing like a CD with like Kurt Cobain written on the spine. That implies that there was more agency on Kurt's part, that this should be a single document to be put out, than I think you should do. But hey, that's me. Ricky, what do you think of this?
I mean, I was never the biggest Nirvana fan, but I'll definitely give this a look. A listen. I also heard that the documentary was quite good.
A lot of people really seem to like it.
Yeah. So I'm gonna try and catch it, because the one thing I watched the trailer again today. Is this documentary style of like doing cartoons like in between like of the story that someone's telling, like, is that getting played? I feel like that is, to me.
You mean played out?
Like played out, yeah. Like, yeah. I don't know why that needs to keep happening. Like, the first time I remember that happened, like actually being done, was it wasn't a documentary, but the Kill Bill series. They did like a animation kind of, like a, you know, Japan animation kind of thing to it. But I can easily get past that and check.
Well,
this
I mean,
out.
Like where the animation thing, I guess, was at least in my head, most recently was really heavily done, was in Neil deGrasse Tyson's Cosmos series. But that was, I mean, to me, that was kind of understandable, because you didn't have, you know, if you're talking about, you know, something that Galileo is doing, you can't, you know, you don't really have a whole ton of visuals to go off of. So he's talking about all these like historic scientists and stuff like that. And, you know, so they're going to animate a bunch of it. The Kurt stuff, it'll be interesting to see how that works, because, you know, he's not a figure from, you know, pre-recorded history. So right. there's definitely enough audio and video and just like photographic footage that's out there that you could probably cobble together a documentary that would work. But hey, I haven't seen it, so I don't want to harsh on anyone's stylistic choices or anything like that. It might be quite well done.
Yeah, I've heard that.
Well, you know, negativity begets negativity, and we usually don't like to rumble too much on the podcast. And I hate being a negative Nancy, but when people bring negativity to your door, you do have to beat it back. And hopefully this is the end of a lot of the negativity that we've had this week. And, you know, hopefully none of this crap goes on and on and on, because, you know, I'm a lover, not a fighter, Adam. I'm a lover. So let's wrap up with something that I know Tricky Ricky was a huge fan of and loves. Let's talk about Andrew Jackson Jihad and Jeff Rosenstock teaming up on an AV Club video. As you might know, on the AV Club, which is run by The Onion, it's a pretty good website. I really like the AV Club. I actually think it's one of the best general entertainment websites there is, honestly. They brought on Andrew Jackson Jihad and Jeff Rosenstock, and they did a mashup of 16 songs. Ricky, what did you think of this?
And I got this.
You're not going to cross your arms and say, I hated it, are you?
No, we need
positivity, Ricky. We need positivity.
No, honestly, like, I watched this when it first got on. I watched this, I think, like six times this week, because it was really, really good. Especially for those of you who went to that awesome like Side One Dummy U.S. tour, where like it was Chumped, Smith Street Band, Andrew Jackson Jihad, and Jeff Rosenstock. Like, this is really cool. So what they did was, Jeff Rosenstock did and his band did a medley of songs, and then when they finished, they unplugged but kept singing and clapping along and doing like an a cappella thing, while Andrew Jackson Jihad helped with that a cappella singing. Then they plugged in and did a medley of songs. The whole 9 minutes is awesome. But what was spectacular about the most spectacular part was when, and I couldn't believe they did this. They did Andrew Jackson Jihad. Hang on, I have notes on here somewhere. Okay, so Andrew Jackson Jihad did the song "Gates of Steel" by Devo.
Nice.
And then, but on top of that, Sean sang "We Got the Beat." And lyrics to "We Got the Beat," and then Ben, their bassist, sang "You Can Go Your Own Way" when they were switching off and taking turns with lyrics. And then, and also on top of that, Sean switched from "We Got the Beat" to "Teenage Dirtbag" by Wheatus. And that section is done so well and brilliantly. And then they transition into "Surrender" by
Cheap Trick.
By Cheap Trick, and that's about, I guess it's like 5 or 6 minutes into the video. The whole thing, though, was done so well. Jeff Rosenstock did, they did "Have You Fallen in Love with Someone You Shouldn't Have" by the Buzzcocks, and a bunch of other great songs. So if you can check this out, definitely do. It's they did a really good job on it.
Fun fact, you guys know the Go-Go's Germs connection?
There's one.
Yeah. Don Balls was briefly in the Go-Go's, and he wrote a couple of songs with the Go-Go's. I think the only one that ever got recorded is on the bonus live disc of the reissue of their first album. But there's one or two Don Balls Go-Go's tracks on that, and they're good.
Interesting.
Well, I think that the rage has come to an end. Ricky, play a happy song. Well, a song that makes you happy.
Okay, so Adam, you might be familiar with this TV show. John, you may be. I'm not sure, but this is a Canadian TV show. Adam, it's called Kenny versus Spenny.
I am aware.
You are aware. Okay, to me, it's like my favorite show ever. There's an episode called where it's the competition. If you've seen the show, it's called "First One to Stop Singing Loses." It's one of the more annoying episodes. And there's a scene where Kenny gets into Spenny's room and sets up with this band called The Delinquents out of Toronto, Ontario. And they do this hardcore song called "Spencer Rice is a Fucking Fuck." And it was hysterical. And I kept looking for the band and trying to get in contact with them, especially when I got into Punk News. I tried getting them on Twitter, but they didn't respond for whatever reason. And I finally just got the nerve to email them and ask them to play one of their songs off an EP they remastered this year called "Punish the Wicked." The band's called The Delinquents, but it's Delinquents. I'll get a review in of this EP in sometime soon. It's pretty good. You can check them out on Facebook. They're on Twitter. Like I said, you can check them out on delinquents.com, delinquents.bandcamp.com. It's self-released. And I think they have an EP, or they just released a 7-inch that should be coming out sometime soon. I think it did maybe earlier this month. So again, the song is called "Holidays" off the "Punish the Wicked" EP.
Dream, bring it in.
That's it for the oddly. I keep making light of it, but man, what the fuck? So, anyways,
can only laugh at this.
I feel the weight is off our shoulders. I mean, there might be some repercussions, but I don't care. I'm done. As in ancient Greek theater, the room has been cleansed, if you will.
John, can you promise the listeners of the Punk News Podcast that if and when Ben Weasel makes this into like a never ending back and forth, it doesn't like become what the show is about?
No, the only time I will, he can call me whatever name he wants and whatever. The only time I will respond, and I'll respond very briefly, is if he says lies or untruths about me or Punk News, and that's it.
I think that's perfectly reasonable. If you want to email us, and I'm sure you do, it's podcast@punknews.org. Or you can find us all on the internet. On Twitter, I'm Adam White. John Gentile, you are John Gentile. Ricky, what the fuck are you again?
I'm at DesertBurst92, and I'll eventually change it.
Is that a Morning Glory reference?
It is not.
That's a reference to Ricky's time when he was in Desert Storm.
No, it's really simple. And that's also my punk news name, but when I was like 13 and really like 12 or 13, really starting to use like the internet a lot more, I needed like an AOL name or whatever. And I just got my first like serious guitar, which was it's a Gibson Les Paul. And the color is called Desert Burst. It's like this brownish gold kind of thing. And I just like the sound of that. And then 92 is the year I was born. That simple and boring.
It is simple and boring. Anyways, so we'll see you guys next week on the Punk News Podcast.
Stay in tune with us.